Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about Voltaire, a reading from Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy, an internet resource. All right. And he's obviously French, a very famous French person. What he actually stands for, it's more noted from what he, or I know more from the way he said things rather than what he actually said. It's in the Enlightenment, this idea of, oh, we can think for ourselves, we don't have to start. The starting point is logic rather than the Bible, which is the Enlightenment. And we're going to read into it. And so this was published in 2009, substantive republication or revision in 2015. And so Voltaire, what is he important? Well, there was these significant people in the Enlightenment, Locke, from John Locke from Britain, and Kant. Now, Locke died in 1704, so looking at this French person is the generation after him, and this is a real impact, the earth-shattering impact of Newton and discovering the basics of science. Led people to scurry around and re-engineer, refit religion, and be really interested to hear. So Voltaire is someone who's just burst onto the scene, as you know, often quoted, and it's very influential. And I don't quite know what he actually stands for, how he fits into the place. So let's read about him. So it's his François Marie Daret. So that's Francois with a little sigil on the C, hyphen Marie. D'Alouette is better known by his pen name Voltaire. So his, Voltaire is not his real name. His real name is someone else. So it's D apostrophe Arouette. And he was alive from 1694 to 1778. So a good, add six to that, he's 84 when he carved it. So he's around there. And 1778 is the start of the French Revolution, or the peak of the French Revolution. So he's in the Louis courts, and the high point of French, I suppose, would you call 18th century genius at this stage. Was a French writer and public activist who played a singular role in defining 18th century movement called the Enlightenment. So, that's what he does. He's in defining. At the center of his work was a new conception of philosophy and the philosopher, the new conception of the philosophy and the philosopher in that several crucial aspects, crucial respects influenced the modern concept of each. Well, okay, so it sounds like you can't really think of maths without going back to Leibniz and Descartes and Fibonacci and all those types of people. And there's lots of people I can't quite remember, those era. Science, you can't go past Giles of Rome and Newton, and you can't really, and obviously Descartes as well. In law, you can't go past Locke, Bacon, Nicolas de Cusa. So he's someone who you can't go past, apparently, in terms of actually understanding philosophy itself. Oh, here we go. Yet in other ways, Voltaire was not a philosopher at all in the modern sense of the term. Oh, there you go. He wrote as many plays, stories, poems as patently philosophical tracts. And in fact, he directed many of his critical writings against the philosophical pretensions of recognized as philosophers such as Leibniz, Malebranche, and Descartes. Oh, there you go. I can't even talk about him. But there you go. In terms of writing plays, I don't think that's necessarily all that bad, because that's what Plato did. He wrote Plato wrote plays. I wonder if that actually comes together. He is, however, a vigorous defender of a conception of natural science that served in his mind as the antidote to the vain fruitlessness of philosophical investigation. In clarifying this, so he would have liked Locke, who actually got induction. Let's plug it straight into the philosophy engines that we get out. So that's good. In clarifying this new distinction between science and philosophy, and especially in fighting vigorously for its publics in public campaigns directed against the perceived enemies of fanaticism and superstition, Voltaire pointed modern philosophy down several paths that has subsequently followed. Okay, so he's a dude. To capture Voltaire's unconventional place in the history of philosophy, this article will be structured in a particular way. Firstly, a full account of Voltaire's life is offered. Not merely as background context of his philosophical work, but as an argument about the way his particular career produced his particular contributions to European philosophy. Secondly, a survey of Voltaire's philosophical views is offered so as to attach the legacy of what Voltaire did with the intellectual viewpoints and his activities reinforced. Now, this is very much interesting, I find, because there's sort of an idea of a conventional scientist and an unconventional scientist, and I suppose I'd be the unconventional scientist who has a little dab at industry, gets into teaching, does all these unusual things. I'm not just the classic scientist who does some work, puts on a lab coat, then dies. It's not that sort of thing. I'll get on to the next page. One has to keep in mind that when you look at someone writing plays, Bacon wrote a novel. There you go. And Galileo and other people wrote plays to expand things. So it's pretty interesting that a play is actually such an enormous, like a film is such an enormous thing. And today we refer to Arnold Schwarzenegger movies and The Matrix, things like that. Okay, let's listen to it. Voltaire's life, the philosopher as a critic and public activist. Voltaire only began to identify himself with philosophy and the philosophie, this is a French one, during his middle age. His work, that was philosophique. That's me, bloody Australians. You must hate me in real frog land. Published in 1734. So that's when he's 40. When he was 40 years old, was a key turning point in his transformation. Before this date, Voltaire's life had no way pointed him towards philosophical destiny that he was later to assume. I love this writing. It's sort of, you can feel this person's got, I'm going to write an essay about Voltaire. You can see it oozing in this author. His early orientation towards literature and libertine sociability, however, shaped his philosophical identity in crucial ways. Well, there you go. So he was a party animal. There's 1.1. So 1.1. Voltaire's early years, 1694, his birth, to 1626, when he's 32. If I add that up, François Marie Dorlet was born. It's his real name. In 1694, the fourth of five children to a well-to-do public official and his well-bred aristocratic wife. It's in its fusion of traditional French aristocratic pedigree and a new wealth of power of royal bureaucratic administration, the Drouet family was representative of the elite society in France during the reign of Louis XIV. The young François-Marie acquired from his parents the benefits of prosperity and political favor, and from the Jesuits at the prestigious Collège Louis le Grand in Paris, he also acquired a first-class education. Now, the Jesuits were also responsible for an awful thing. They're responsible for my bloody education, but also Descartes. It's a pretty interesting, like this, and it's interesting that the Jesuits for all the waffle, actually did supply a lot of the education for the Enlightenment. What else was I thinking? Lavoisier, who is a tax farmer. So its society is this, so you could not possibly understand where it was going. England had its glorious revolution and it sort of just potted around being dreadfully English. But here, things are going wild. Francois Marie, what a bloke name. You get absolutely bashed up in Australia if you had a name like that. G'day, mate. What's your name? Francois Marie. That's Sheila's name, isn't it, mate? You'd be bashed up. It'd be so embarrassing. If he's an Aussie. Francois Marie also acquired an introduction to modern letters from his father, who was an active in the literary culture of the period in both France and the royal court at Versailles. Versailles is sort of like, was it Michael Jackson's fantasy land? Whatever it is, it was just complete whack. Francois Senior, I think I will call my son Francois. Can't call him Francois. I'll call him Marie. I wonder what his mum's name was. Marie. Appears to enjoy the company of the men of letters. Yet, to his frustration, his son's ambition to become a writer is notorious. So, this is where you sit down. You know, I think it would be man of emails now, but he writes such crap emails. And from his early youth, Voltaire aspired to emulate his idols Molière, Racine, and Corneille, and become a playwright. And yet Voltaire's father strenuously opposed the idea. You're not going to Hollywood, you're not going to LA. Yes, I am. I wonder what the French version of LA was. Hoping to install his son in a position of public authority, you'll get yourself chopped up by the guillotines. I bet he would have been chopped up by the guillotines. He just died before. First as a law student, then as a lawyer's apprentice, and finally as a secretary of French diplomat, Voltaire attempted to fulfill his father's wishes. Oh no! But in each case, he ended up abandoning his post, sometimes amidst scandal. Oh, I can always feel a baguette. Oh. But it's interesting that Francis Bacon was also a lawyer. So certain people, lawyers, were more get out there and actually fix, you know, get philosophical laws happening, whereas you've got different ones who are academics. Escaping from the burdens of these public obligations, Voltaire would retreat into his libertine sociability of Paris. It was there in 1720, during the culturally vibrant period of the Regency government between the reigns of Louis the 14th and 15th. So for you who still work in Roman numerals, that's the XIV and XV. From 1715 to 1723, that Voltaire established one dimension of his identity. Now this is quite amazing to read. His wit and congeniality were legendary even as a youth, so had few difficulties to establish himself as a popular figure in Regency literary circles. He's a cad, he's a theme. He was also learned how to play the patronage game, so important for those with writerly ambitions. So he was able to smooth his way up. Me, I'm unfortunately not very good at patronage. I'm no good at lying, no good at patronage. Mate, that's some administration you got hanging out there, mate. He also, thanks, therefore, to some artfully composed writing, a couple of well-made contacts, and more than a few bon mots, right? It means good words, and a little successful investing, especially during John Law's Mississippi bubble fiasco. What's the Mississippi bubble fiasco? I could find that out. Voltaire was able to establish himself as an independent man of letters in Paris. His literary debut occurred in 1718. Okay, with the publication of his Oedipe, and reworking the ancient tragedy that evoked a French classicism of Racine and Corneille. The play was first performed at the home of the Duchesse de Maine et Secur, a sign of Voltaire's quick ascent to the very pinnacle of elite literary society. It was published. Title page also announced the new pen name that Voltaire would ever after deploy. You can look at, I'm going to see a play of François Marie. Oh, Voltaire, he sounds so French. Now, during the Regency, Voltaire circulated, we have the Regency period in Britain 100 years later. That's amazing. During the Regency, Voltaire circulated wildly with elite circles such as those that congregated at Secur, the Scourou. But he also cultivated more illicit libertine sociability as well. This pairing was not at all uncommon during this time, and Voltaire's intellectual work of 1720, a mix of poems and poems and plays that shifted between the playful libertism and serious classicism, seemed, and seemingly without pause, illustrated perfectly the values of pleasure. Onete, well, I don't know what Onete, the John Law's Mississippi Bible, I want to find out. And good taste were the watchwords of the cultural milieu. Philosophy was also part of this mix. And during the Regency, the young Voltaire was especially shaped by his contacts with the English aristocrat, free thinker and Jacobite, Lord Bolingbroke. I don't believe it. Bolingbroke lived in exile in France during the Regency period. And Voltaire was a frequent visitor to La Source, the Englishman's estate near Orléans. The chateau served as a reunion point for a wide range of intellectuals. And many believe that Voltaire was the first introduced to the natural philosophy generally, and to the work of Locke, and English and Newtonian specifically, at Bollington's estate, Bolingbroke's estate. This break. Bolingbroke. Bolingbroke is a bad kettle. Bolingbroke. So he's, why is he, how could you? Alright, so you've got all these bizarre things happening in England, haven't you? Got I think the Great Fire. Newton's happening. Oh, this is, I just can't work this out. Why would he be shunned out of England? They've got the pomps they want. The English period, 1.2, from 1726 to 1729. Yet, even if Voltaire was introduced to English philosophy in this way, his influence on his thought was mostly shaped by his brief exile to England. Okay, so why would he be exiled to England? The two lawyers, it's hard to understand how you could possibly, you know, everyone, what's happening? Alright, well, Louis, he's dead, and he's replaced with another Louis. I can't see how they could have different Louis, but you do. The occasion of his departure was an affair of honour. Oh God, it's a real French person. A very powerful aristocrat, Duc de Rouen, accused Voltaire of defamation, and in the face of this charge, the untitled writer chose to save his face and avoid a more serious prosecution by leaving the country indefinitely. In the spring of 1726, therefore, Voltaire left Paris for England. You want religious persecution, his views, but no, you have defamed me. Uh-huh. And it was during his English period that Voltaire's transition to the mature philosophy began. Bolingbroke, whose address Voltaire left in Paris as his own forwarding address, was one conduit of the influence. In particular, Voltaire met through Bolingbroke Jonathan Swift, Richard Galfil's thing, Alexander Pope, and John Gray. Writers who were at the moment beginning to experiment with the use of literary forms such as the novel and the theatre in creation of a new kind of public politics. Swift's Gulliver's Travels, which appeared only months before Voltaire's arrival, it's the most famous exemplar of the new fusion of writing with political criticism. Now, what was Ah, yes. So it was Swift who was criticising Bacon's Utopian Island. So Bacon wrote a thing, and Swift wrote a critique of arriving. So they travelled to this island, so they really just made a mockery of it. So what's the name of Bacon's Island? Crap. Gee, my memory's suffering. Okay. Okay. Voltaire's is the most famous example of a new fusion of writing and political criticism. Of course, we've got the stand-up. Later in the same year, although if you look at some or other Astrophanes, the clouds, which criticise Socrates, is an interesting thing. Except it's a bit more obtuse, isn't it? Okay. Later the same year, Bolingbroke was brought out the first issue of The Craftsman, a political journal that served as a public platform for the circle, for his circle's Tories' opposition to the Whigs' oligarchy in England. Mississippi bubble, I've got to find out what that is, and this whole Whig, this, all this history coming along, and no one really cares anymore. Okay. The Craftsman helped create English political journalism of a grand style, and for the next 3 years, Voltaire moved in Bolingbroke's circle, absorbing the culture and sharing the political consternation that was percolating all around him. Oh, it's going to be the French Revolution. Voltaire did not risk himself to Bolingbroke's circle alone, however. After Bolingbroke, his primary contact in England, Angleterre, was a merchant by name of Everard Faulkner. Faulkner introduced Voltaire to a circle of London life entirely different from that of Bolingbroke's circle of Tory intellectuals. So Tories are Thatcher people, aren't they? Oh, they're the people in the right wing. Tories, good on you, Tory. You've bought Britain to Brexit. Well, the voters want something completely whack. I mean, it's England's fault. You know, if you're an island, just move further away from Europe. Australia did the right thing. We thought Europe was just so-so, so we just moved as far away as humanly possible. This included the Whig circles that Bolingbroke's roots opposed. It also included figures such as Samuel Clarke and other self-proclaimed Newtonians. Oh my God, Father, there is someone who can claim yourself as a non-upper class Newtonian. I'm in that class, I'm a physicist, and I just think wealth is just robbery myself. You know, people who can say, oh, I earned that such and such, such and such, get off my property or I'll shoot you. Voltaire did not meet Newton himself before Sir Isaac's death in March 1727. But he did meet his sister, learning from her the famous myth of Newton's apple, which Voltaire would play a major role in making famous. What the heck? Oh, man, the whole Newton's saga. That's an interesting thing. So Voltaire, see, I read a history of Newton, that didn't get out, that Voltaire did the apple thing. Apple never falls from the tree, but the sister, and how is the sister, how it all fits, if you see it, I can't work it out. Voltaire also came to know the other Newtonians in Clark's circle. What? There is a Newtonian political movement? What? And since he became proficient enough with English to write letters and even fiction in the language, it is very likely that he immersed himself in their writings as well. Voltaire, who visited Holland during these years, forming important contacts with Dutch journalists and publishers, and meeting Wilhelm Gravesend, I can't believe these things, and Dutch Newtonian savants. What the heck? this Newton person is getting bigger than I know. Kant reacts to Newton, Locke reacts to Newton, everyone's reacting to bloody Newton, and we just don't even know it. And even the theses I've read about Newton don't have any of this. I'm just really pleased I read this. Can you imagine studying physics without knowing about Voltaire? And I thought he was obviously a French figure of fun. Okay. Given his other activities, it is also likely that Voltaire frequently frequented the coffee houses of London, and even if no firm evidence survives confirming that he did, it would not be surprising, I hate the people who do this, surprising therefore that to learn that Voltaire's attended the Newtonian public lectures by John Theophilus de Solgiers, and those who are his rivals. What precise quadrants of all encounters in England made Voltaire into a very knowledgeable student of English national philosophers? So, I didn't know there were Newtonians. Newtonians in the wig. So Newton and the Labour Party. And it's really interesting that we've got sort of a Tory wig thing going on here in Australia. And they've got vastly different attitudes to science in terms of, I think the liberal people just really don't get science. When the French, it's interesting that science actually got embedded into a political system. That just does my head in. Becoming a philosophie, so it's a French word. When French officials granted Voltaire permission to re-enter Paris in 1729, he was devoid of pensions and banned from the royal court of Versailles. This person must have really a powerful person right up the wrong way. But he was also a different kind of writer and thinker. I've changed, mate. Look, we all know that all these people, Newton, everybody, if you wanted to know what they did, is they all spoke in a thick Australian accent, because that's the way I'm speaking. But he was also a different kind of writer and thinker. He no doubt overly grandiosed to say, with Lord Maudsley, that Voltaire left France a poet and returned a sage. It was also an exaggeration to say that he was transformed from a poet into a philosophy while in England. For one, these two sides of Voltaire's intellectual identity were forever intertwined, and he never experienced the absolute transformation from one to the other at any point in his life. But the English years did trigger a transformation in him. Just wanted to say that. He wanted to get that quote in, this bastard. Okay. After his return to France, Voltaire worked hard to restore his sources of financial and political support. His financial problems were the easiest to solve. In 1729, the French government staged a sort of lottery to help amortize some of the royal debt. What the heck? Let me read that one again. The French government staged a sort of lottery to help amortize, get rid of, dispense the royal debt. A friend perceived an opportunity for investors to structure the government's offering. And at a dinner attended by Voltaire, he formed a society to purchase shares. Voltaire's participated, and in the fall of that year, when the returns were posted, he had made a fortune. This is, what the heck? He made a fortune out of debt. Voltaire's inheritance from his father also became available to him at the same time. And from that date on, Voltaire never again struggled financially. The result was no insignificant developments in Voltaire's financial independently effectively freed him from one dimension of the patronage system so necessarily inspiring writers and intellectuals in. Which is interesting that it's not there's the entire patronage system. You've got Leibniz and, you know, the patrons, and the Bacon, the patronage system. And I dare say that there is a sort of patronage system in Australia, but What an amazing thing. In particular, while other writers were required to appeal to powerful financial patrons in order to secure a livelihood that made it possible for the intellectual careers, Voltaire was never again beholden to these imperatives. The patronage structures of the old regime provided more than economic support for writers, however, and restoring the credit upon which his reputation as a writer and thinker depended was far less simple. Okay, so he's funding, self-funded, but he, you know, you can imagine, hated. We have these sorts of things, or as you know, the publication houses in Australia are, well, they're legendary and they're also dead. So you've got the Murdochs and these other powerful moguls. Gradually, however, through a combination of artfully written plays and poems and essays and careful self-presentation to Parisian society, Voltaire began to regain his public stature. In the fall of 1732, when the next stage of his career began to unfold, Voltaire was residing in the royal court of Versailles. A sign of his re-establishment in French society was all but complete. So can you imagine Versailles? What the heck is Versailles? And Versailles is just jaw-droppingly blah. Well, there's some places which really left me uninspired. One was Chambord. These things where they go over the top. But, you know, you're allowed to go over the top if you're French. During his rehabilitation, Voltaire also formed a new relationship that was profoundly influential in subsequent decades. He became reacquainted with Émile Letonnier de Béthune, the daughter of one of his earliest patrons, who married in 1722, become the Marquis de Chalais. Émile de Chalais was 29 years old in the spring of 1733 when Voltaire began a relationship with her. She was also a uniquely accomplished woman. De Chalais, I think she's the one who studied Newton. I think she's the one who studied, I don't know, was she the one that studied Newton and they wrote these horrendous books? De Chalais's father, Baron de Béthune, hosted a regular gathering of his men of letters that included Voltaire, and his daughter, 10 years younger than Voltaire, shared these occasions. Their father also ensured that Emily received an education that was exceptional for girls at the time. I think that's it, Emily. She's a fairly famous French person. She studied Greek and Latin and trained in mathematics, and when Voltaire reconnected with her in 1733, she was a very knowledgeable thinker in her own right, even if her own intellectual career, which would include original treatises on natural philosophy and a complete French translation of Newton. Well, there you go. I knew she was involved in Newton. Complete French translation of Newton's Principia Mathematica. Still the only complete French translation ever published had not yet begun. Her intellectual talents combined with her vivacity and personality drew Voltaire to her. And though De Chalais was the title aristocrat, married and an important military officer, the couple was able to form a lasting partnership that did not interfere with De Chalais' marriage. Good God. This arrangement proved especially beneficial to Voltaire when the scandal forced him to flee Paris and to establish himself permanently in the Duchette family estate in Crie. Oh, God. From 1734, when this arrangement began, to 1749, when Duchette died during childbirth, Crie was home to each along with the site of intense intellectual collaboration. It was during this period that both Voltaire and Du Chalet became widely known as philosophical figures, intellectual history of each before. Oh, well, there you go. Du Chalet, or Emily Du Chalet, is a philosopher in her own right. It's one of these hidden women. So hard. And if you read the absolute patronizing things written for women at the time, it's just insane. And the intellectual history of each before 17, and you've also got Lavoisier's wife. There's some pretty good French women around. And the intellectual history of each before 1749. is most accurately described as the history of the couple's joint intellectual endeavours. Well, there you go. You couldn't get more in-your-face French than Voltaire. And it's only 25 minutes in. I suppose I have to read the next section to go across. Now, the discovery of Newton, the fact that there was Newtonians in politics, Newton's sister, the play, Voltaire, really important stuff. And then I just find it just incredible. Now, believe it, the Newton Wars from 1732 to 1745. That's what it is, 1.4. And this tells me I'm only 25 minutes in, so I must be doing it much better than I was previously. However, we now know that Newton's carked it. So let's listen. So there's scandals. He has to flee to... And Locke has to flee. This scandal stuff is pushing people around. And it's interesting that it's not necessarily a bad thing having a bit of scandal pushing people around. Okay, let's read this here. The Newton Wars, 1732 to 1745. So Newton's carked it. For Voltaire, the events of being sent fleeing from Macaulay, it was also an impetus for much of his works while there. Oh, okay, so there's a couple of things which are going to get him working, but also going off. While in England, which is his earlier exile, Voltaire had begun to compose a set of letters framed according to the well-established genre of a traveller reporting to friends back home about foreign lands. Montesque, 1721, Letters Persanes, which offers a set of fictionalized letters by Persians allegedly traveling in France, and Swift's Gulliver's Travels were clear influences when, oh, which is interesting. And really, you have to think that a podcast is in that those transitions were clear influences of Voltaire conceived his works. But unlike the authors of the overtly fictionalized account, Voltaire's innovated by adopting a journalistic stance instead. One that offers readers an empirically recognizable account of several aspects of English society. The original titles, Letters on England, Voltaire's left a draft for the text with a London publisher before returning home in 1729. Once in France, he began to expand the work, adding to the letters drafted while in England, which focuses largely on the different religious sects in England and English Parliament, several new letters, including some on English philosophy. The new text was included letters on Bacon, Locke and Newton. There you go. So I'm doing all those people for you, mate. But it's interesting that Bacon wrote a fictionalized account. It's the idea of fiction. And we've now got science fiction going across. And that Bacon's wrote a science fiction novel. Yeah, it really is a science fiction novel. Details of Newtonian natural philosophy, along with the account of English practice of inoculation of smallpox, was also acquired a new title when it was first published in France, called Lettres Philosophiques. So, it's a bit like Plato's plays, which, you know, Socrates came through the front door and sat down and cracked a tinny with his mates and said, "Mate, this is what it's like." And they had it, "Oh, Socrates, can you come over to the barbie and do things?" And, you know, all these people. That never happened, but it's amazing. Before it appeared, Voltaire attempted to get visual fiction for his book from the Royal Censors, a requirement from France at the time. His publisher, however, ultimately released the book without his approval, so with Voltaire's permission, this made the first edition of the letters illicit, a fact that contributed to the scandal that it triggered, but once that one in no way explains the furor the book caused. Historians, in fact, still scratch their heads when trying to understand why Voltaire's letters proved so controversial. The only thing that is clear is that the work did cause sensation that subsequently triggered a rapid and overwhelming response on the part of French authorities. The book was publicly burnt. "Oh, I'm going to burn your book." By the royal hangman. Shit.
months after its release. And this act turned Voltaire into a widely known intellectual outlaw. The book was publicly burned by the royal... You have a royal book burn? No. He's sick today, mate. Who have you got left? I've got the hangman. Hangman, it's sort of like... I don't know. Because they haven't got the guillotine. He's turned into a intellectual outlaw. Gosh. He had been... had it been executed, a royal letter de cachet would have sent Voltaire into a royal prison at Bastille as a result of his authorship of the Velocities. Instead, he was able to flee to the Duchette Calais in Italy, where the couple used the sovereignty granted by her aristocratic titles created a safe haven and place for Voltaire's new position as a philosophical rebel and writer in exile. Oh, this is laughable. So he's an outlaw. But he's also like the Ned Kelly of one of our outlaws. We've got a few Aussie outlaws, but they're sort of a bit more less Voltaire-like. Had Voltaire been able to avoid the scandal triggered by the letters of Felicic, it's hardly like that he would have been chosen to do so. He would have, yet, once it was thrust upon him, he adopted the identical of a physical exile, an outlaw writer, with conviction, using it to create a new identity for himself, Zorro. One that was to have far-reaching consequences for the history of Western philosophy. At first, Newtonian science served as a vehicle for his transformation. In the decades before 1734, a series of controversies had erupted, especially in France, about the character and legitimacy of Newtonian science, especially the theory of universal gravitation and the physics of gravitational attraction through empty space. I cannot go through empty space. Voltaire positioned his letters philosophically as an intervention of these two controversies, drafting a famously and widely cited letter that used an opposition between Newton and Descartes to frame a set of fundamentally differences between French and English philosophy at the time. And you've got to understand that Descartes basically was toying with general relativity. In its very sense. So I have to say, Descartes, you got, and Newton saying, it's God. It's God. God can do things across empty space. It's like cracker. He also included other letters about Newtonian science in the work while linking So he claimed the philosophies of Bacon, Locke and Newton to an English philosophical complex that he championed as a remedy to perceived errors and illusions perpetuated by the French by René Descartes and Nicholas Malebranche. Oh. I just don't think he understood Descartes, in my own view. Okay. Because Descartes, I don't think Descartes was as wicked as he made out. Voltaire did not invent this framework, but he did use it to inflame a set of debates that were raging, debates that placed him and a small group of young members of the Royal Academy of Science of Paris, apparent opposition to the older, more established members of his bataillon of French science. Once installed in Calais, both Voltaire and Duchette further exploited this apparent division by engaging in a campaign on behalf of Newtonianism that once continually targeted and imagined monolithic French academic Cartesian as an enemy against which they in the name of Newtonianism were fighting. Look, and you can see it. You can see this is, people really haven't understood that. When you read through the Principalia, there's just these veiled hatred to Descartes. And, you know, here I'm doing this test after test after test. I don't know. And the Newton's things, you write it. Well, that's a real crap test, Isaac. That's a rubbish. You're rubbish. And, you know, what is it all about? You're trying to tell me what you're trying to disprove Descartes yet again. He hated the bastard. The centerpiece of the campaign of Voltaire's Element de la Philosophie de Newton was first published in 1738 and then again in 1745 in a new definitive edition that included a new section, first published in 1740, devoted to Newton's metaphysics. What I was going to say was that and Emil was such a fantastic woman, and the court associated with it, how she standard, look, I just feel really sorry for her. She was just so treated as trash. Just reading some of the things written to her and books for her, and she, I don't know, I just jump to the nearest guillotine and pull the lever myself to get out of this place. Voltaire offers the book as a clear, accurate, accessible account of Newton's philosophy suitable for the ignorant Frenchman. Ignorant Frenchman, a group that he imagined to be large, but he also conceived of it as a machine de guerre directed against the Carnesian establishment, which he believed was holding France back from a modern life, light of scientific truth. Verista's criticism of Voltaire and his work quickly erupted, and some critics emphasizing his rebellious and immoral. It's just that openly living with the. Immoral proclivities, I love that. While others focused on his precise scientific views, Voltaire collapsed both challenges into a single vision of his enemy, the backward Cartesianism. He fought fiercely to defend his position, and unprecedented culture war erupted in France, centered on the character and value of Newtonian natural philosophy. Gillette contributed to his campaign by writing a solitary review of Voltaire's Elements in the Journal de Savants, the most authoritative French learned periodical of the day. A couple also added their scientific credibility by receiving separate honorable mentions in the 1738 Paris Academy Prize Contest on the nature of fire. Which is rather interesting because, which is interesting because the majority of people don't teach fire correctly. That through the air, fire, fuel, heat thing, and miss the entire chemical reaction of it. Voltaire's, likewise, worked tirelessly rebutting critics and advancing his position in pamphlets and contributions to learned periodicals. By 1745, when the definitive edition of the Voltaire's Elements was published, the tides were turning his way. By 1750, the position had become widespread in France, had been converted from the backward, erroneous Cartesian to the modern Latin Newtonianism, thanks to the heroic intellectual efforts of figures like Voltaire. Of course, you just gotta wonder, so the French, is this all gonna go? Of course, in, 30 years, 1750, you've got the French Revolution. I've just gotta get the dates in my head. Well, that's gonna be it for the moment. I've run out of pressure, and that's only 40 minutes, but I'll get going through this person, Voltaire. Voltaire is definitively French. He just devise, you know, I was expecting it. Nothing. I knew nothing of this. So, you've shared with me as I've read for the first time about it. And this is the missing link. And, you can sort of see echoes of this patronage system and, echoes of people thinking other people backwards without actually ever understanding it. I think Voltaire did. Does he understand Newtonian physics is the main thing. Thanks a lot for listening.
podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.